S-A-B-O-O, San Francisco, baby, baby!
Shiba, shiba! Shiba, shiba! Shiba, shiba!
Let me in!
Shiba, shiba!
I wanna be closer to you!
Shiba, shiba!
Open up your soul!
Shiba, shiba!
Let me find that part of you! The part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your love.
Oh, why don't you let me in? Let me be the first to ever touch your mind.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. And a little later on in the show, we will be speaking with several people who will help you enjoy the beauty that is theta. But in the meantime, how about a little music?
Thank you.
That's King Curtis and Little Brother Soul. Yes, my friends, that is from the new scene of King Curtis. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. And you know what? It takes all kinds to make a democracy. Here to talk about how it takes all kinds of stories of American democracy, I'd like to welcome Dan Hoyle. Hello.
Hello, hello.
How's it been going?
It's been going great. It's so good to be here on one of my favorite radio stations of all time.
Oh, awesome.
Been listening since I was a kid growing up here in the city, and it's always a pleasure and a privilege to be on KPOO.
So how long have you been doing sort of one-man shows?
It's been 20 years now.
Wow. When did you start?
So I started, I went to Northwestern University.
Okay.
Grew up in the city. And my first professional show was 2004, although mm-hmm. I feel like I owe a great debt to the city because it helped me. It sort of launched me. As a kid, I would go to all different neighborhoods around the city and meet different people, talk to different people, hear different stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, and people were always, you know, supportive and being like, oh, cool, you want to know our stories, you want to know what's happening in this neighborhood, that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt was like that was my little training ground, but I didn't really know it.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went to college and I studied this thing of performance studies and how do you turn stories, real stories from people that you hear into theater.
Okay.
And that's what I've been doing for the last 20 years. And now this new show might be my most urgent because it's stories of American democracy.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to all the places where the future of the country is really contested.
Mm.
I went to school board meetings in Florida where all the stuff around book banning and LGBTQ, making it tough on those kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to this school board meeting and I had no idea. There was like 400 people outside the school board
wow.
meeting. And I ended up meeting this guy who at first I thought he was sort of on the conservative side. He was there and he was dipping, you know, he got his dip cup
oh, okay.
with tobacco,
yeah, yeah.
you know, big uh-huh. old puff lip out. And he was like, yeah, man, welcome to a Florida school board meeting. And I was like, okay. And it turns out he'd grown up really conservative,
uh-huh.
but he kind of had this awakening partly through, you'll appreciate this, music.
Uh-huh.
He was like, well, I grew up really conservative. Yeah, my parents were really conservative, but we live in a college town, so it's mm-hmm. a lot easier to get drugs and liquors. You don't have an ID if you're a drug dealer. So I started like, you know, smoking weed and then going to fish and eating acid, mushrooms. You know, in college, I try to bounce back, get back to some like Republican ideals my dad had, you know. But eat enough acid, man, you just start to see the world. And he had this awakening.
Uh-huh.
And then it turned – and then he had two kids and then his daughter came out as being gay.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally just came out to his own family. They hadn't been talking politics and he mm-hmm. kind of just finally mm-hmm. was like, you know what? I need to be who I am. And now he's sort of like a low-key activist. So he started out as a really conservative Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was like a fish head. And now he's this like dad activist.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole bunch of stories of I call them unlikely activists, unlikely change makers who are pushing the country forward in some of the most difficult places.
It seems like the more people have people in their lives who, you know, don't line up with their preconceived notions, the more likely it is that they're going to change their minds more liberally. And then as people disappear from other people's lives, you know, when you get that sort of homogeneity, that's when you get the switch to the more conservative side of the spectrum.
Yeah, and it's really interesting coming out of the pandemic, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we were all sort of invited to go down the deepest rabbit holes mm-hmm. ever,
mm-hmm.
you know, 1 and 2 year rabbit holes where we weren't talking to it, we weren't seeing each other, or we were doing only online,
mm-hmm.
which can be great in certain ways, but if you don't have that in-person connection at a certain while, everyone just kind of loses it a little bit,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the glories of this show is, it's about these spaces where democracy happens. There's a barbershop in Las Vegas that I profile, mm-hmm. Where it's all these guys who are sort of giving each other a hard time and, you know, scrolling through their phones and looking good and checking out girls and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But mm-hmm. then they're also talking politics. Mm. And when I get there, he's like, you want a haircut? You want to talk politics? It's a barbershop, homie. That's what we do. And first they're kind of like, who is this guy? But then he looks at me. He's like, yeah, you haven't had a haircut in like 3 years, right? You're like one of those dudes who like, oh, his wife cut his hair. Oh, that's a co-red. Get in the chair, homie. And I ended up hanging out there for a couple of days. Uh-huh. And I try to do what some people call like hearing somebody's deep story, mm-hmm, right? Because mm-hmm. we all have these impressions of each other based on first look. And the joy of my life is being able to sort of get down with people, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. get past that. Mm-hmm. And then people, you have to earn people's trust and earn people's vulnerability. But I say most people go through the world not really being understood mm-hmm. on much of a level. Mm-hmm. And I teach what I do now, and I tell my students, you're offering somebody a chance to be heard and seen on a level they most people don't get. And something interesting by a stranger, it's not even like your friends or family mm-hmm. having all that baggage. It's like, who are you right now?
Have you ever heard someone's story and it rattled you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, at that school board meeting in Florida, this woman, she said, who are you with? She uh-huh. said, where are you from? Uh-huh. I said, Oakland. She said, oh my God, I am so sorry. Nobody should have to live like that. You know, and I know immediately where she's getting her news.
Uh-huh.
And that happens a lot more now is I say, oh, I'm from San Francisco, or I'm from Oakland. And if they have like a twitch in their eye, mm-hmm. I'm sort of like, okay, you're reading the worst stories. I uh-huh. know where you're getting your news.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also stories that both rattle me and really move me. I was in this bar, and this guy, the bartender said, "Here, your beer. Burr's on its way." And he looked at me. He said, "Why are you so happy?" And I said, "Well, I've been out. Yeah, I've been locked down pretty hard during the pandemic. I'm out again. You know, I got two little kids, and I'm an actor and playwright, and I'm working on a play about how people change and can we change and how do we heal."
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me with his cigarette and he said, "Oh, you got a hippie here. Definitely got a hippie." But then he told me his story,
mm-hmm.
and he had grown up in the rural North Carolina, had become a contractor with Blackwater, had a very traumatic experience there, and had learned that it's sort of the scales had fallen from his eyes, mm-hmm. right? He said something really funny. At the same time, there's this guy who's trying to get in the bar who's carrying weapons.
Oh.
And so he's saying, "No, you cannot come into this bar. Get out." He looks at him and he says, "These guys learn how to be a man on YouTube. Think it's all an act."
Mm.
And so I ended up hanging out with him and get this like really, really interesting story that's sort of like poetic. I mean, the whole story, audiences are like, whoa. And it was the same thing for me where mm-hmm. I just kind of got floored in the moment. And so that's the joy of theater too, is, you know, I'm doing the voices now, but when you come to the theater, you see, I do full embodiment. So mm-hmm. you see physically, you feel like you're there. There's audio that's, you know, recorded and then worked in. So you get the sort of the background of a bar. So you get to travel to all these different places and hang out with people. And people sometimes say like, well, I'm glad you did it, 'cause I don't know if I would want to do that.
Okay.
But in a theater, you know, you're safe, and yet it's also you feel like you're there.
Okay. So I have a two-part question, which is, have you ever met someone whose story you wanted to do, but you couldn't do it justice? And then have you met someone where you thought, I do not want to give this person a platform?
For sure. For sure. I went to a prepper conference.
What's a prepper conference?
Preppers are people who are kind of preparing for a catastrophic society-wide shutdown, right?
Yeah.
And there's sort of a lot of conspiracy theory stuff in there. But I went with an open mind, and I had some really interesting conversations with people. This one guy kept calling me Hollywood. I'm like, no, I'm a stage actor. I'm a stage actor. But it just wasn't interesting enough. And some of this, and yeah, exactly what you say is like, we know of that. And if there isn't, if you're not getting to something deeper that illuminates something about, okay, why are people going down this particular path? And also I feel like right now, I mean, the subtitle Stories of American Democracy is because there are parts of our democracy that are under attack, both overtly and sort of, you know, in ways we sort of know about. I mean, the beginning of the show, I'm playing myself, and we're at this party in the Bay Area, and people are sort of talking about. And this one woman's like, yeah, I'm just like so worried about everything this election, but I'm just like, my kids' soccer schedules are so crazy. I'm just going to like keep driving to school and like keep driving them to soccer. And this guy says, yeah, I mean, it's a good thing about being busy is like there's no time to worry, but it'll be weird if we have to tell our kids when they're older, like, sorry about fascism, we were overscheduled.
That is great.
And so I think it encapsulates this feeling I think some people are feeling of like, okay, I got to do my everyday, but like, wait. And the joy of this show is here are these people and places and spaces where they are pushing the country forward. I think sometimes in the Bay Area we can feel like we're watching these sort of conflicts from afar. I mean, obviously stuff happens in our community. We're not immune to anything. And there's all types of issues that we have. But these sort of larger national fractures, you really see them in you know, another place I go to is Atlanta and profile all these organizers who are getting people signed up to vote. And It's inspiring, and audiences talk about feeling like connected to something bigger. Like, oh wow, if these people are pushing it forward there, what can I do here?
Oh, that's great. That's great. So, why is it called Takes All Kinds?
It's funny because you're right. It is from the phrase "It Takes All Kinds." Somebody's like, "Why don't you just drop the it?" And I was like, "Okay." And then sometimes I go back and forth. I'm like, "Maybe we do need the." It because it's but it takes all kinds because it's showing all these different people from different backgrounds who are not sort of lifelong activists. Some of the folks who are registering people to vote, there's a woman who's like a former stripper. There's a guy who's working as a bartender. He's like, I was working as a bartender. Yeah, I was making pretty good money. But I said, I don't want to be a 50-year-old bartender. And I saw the senatorial election in Georgia. I thought, you know, if Georgia could elect a black man and a Jew, that there'd be some Confederate soldiers rolling over in their graves. And that inspired him. And now he's been doing it for 4 years. And so those stories to me are so cool because it's like people's personal stories, that's how we connect.
Okay. So when you go out there and you're talking and you're seeing this sort of this cross section, do you get a feel that that things are moving in a positive direction, or do you still feel like it can go either way?
I think things can go either way. We know that this election is a big one. The thing that gives me hope about the folks that I've profiled and appear in the show is in a way they don't have the privilege or the luxury to watch. They feel like they're in the fight.
And
they talk about the legacy. So these organizers, they talk about the legacy of the SCLC, of civil rights organizers. Some of them, they have family that were a part of that generation. Mm-hmm. And they see voter registration, fighting attempts at disenfranchisement and mm-hmm. Discouraging people to register. They see that as part of the legacy. And at the same time, they talk about like they're just everyday folks, you know. So to me, the hopeful part is it breaks down the here's the sainted and here's the sinners.
Mm-hmm.
It's like no, we're all a little bit of a mix,
mm-hmm.
and how do we pull ourselves up to fight in that fight at whatever level you can get in.
And then the flip side of that is, what do you see that just scares the bejesus out of you?
Guns. There's keep it real. There's a lot of guns in the Bay Area. There's a lot of guns in Oakland. We live in Oakland, you know. The thing that's different in some of these places is there's such a normalization of just guns as recreation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's like trying to come to the bar with an AK-47, you know, and you're just like, what do you need that for? And this is the bartender, he was a contractor. He saw really intense stuff in mm-hmm. Iraq, you
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
and he says, AR-15s are like a cool Lego set, fun to shoot and interesting. Yeah. Do I think it should be banned? Yeah.
Mm.
So the guns, my wife's a school teacher. We got two little kids. Like, that's just a game changer. And that's so unique to the U.S. in terms of the commonality of that. I would say that's the thing that is, it's a reality that I think we all are like struggling to, how do we deal with that?
Okay. So the show is called Takes All Kinds, Stories of American Democracy. When does it start? When does it end? How do we see it?
Yes. So it's playing right now at the Marsh in San Francisco, which mm-hmm. is a pretty incredible little theater. Actually, I learned from somebody in the neighborhood a few years ago that Prince once played there. It used to be a little jazz club back in the day.
Okay.
And it's been a theater right there on Valencia and 22nd. Okay. It plays there Fridays and Saturday nights. And then it's also this week, it's playing in Oakland at the Oakland Theater Project just Wednesday and Sunday.
Where's the Oakland Theater Project?
Oakland Theater Project is on MLK and 14th, which is in the Flax Building.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There's a little Cuddy Theater in there.
Oh, all
yeah.
right. All right.
And they do amazing work. So it's kind of, it's a Bay-wide event for another week, and it'll be continuing at the Marsh for through October.
Okay. And how do people go about getting tickets?
TheMarsh.org and OaklandTheaterProject.org, I believe, or uh-huh. OTP.org.
Okay. And then if people want to know what you personally are doing and, you know, and follow you around, how do they go about doing that?
For sure. I have a little website, danhoyle.com, and I also have been writing dispatches on a Substack. It's called Go There to Know There, in honor of the great oral historian and collector of stories, Zora Neale Hurston, which is one of the phrases she had in Their Eyes Were Watching God. That's been kind of a North Star for me. You have to be on ground. You have to be on people's turf to really get the story. So I write about sort of the backstories on that as well.
Okay. Well, Dan Hoyle, I want to thank you so much for being on the show again today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Appreciate all you do.
Oh, no problem. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. Takes All Kinds. Stories of American Democracy at the Marsh, August 31st to October 26th, Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30. And the other place again?
Oakland Theater Project for two more shows this week.
Excellent. All right, people of Earth, let's listen to some music that maybe furthers what he's trying to talk to you about.
Freedom. Run from this demon. Please don't give them a reason to spill blood on my sneakers. So I just put my
listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. That's Joseph Angel and American Funeral from American Funeral. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, you know the Lorraine Hansberry Theater does amazing work, and they've got a show coming up called The Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body. Here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome artistic director as well as director of the show, Marga Hall. Hello.
Hey, DJ Marilyn. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good.
So before we get started, how long have you been with the Lorraine Hansberry Theater Company?
I came on board to LHT in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
During the pandemic.
Dang.
And I was concerned about Black theaters continuing to thrive, mm-hmm, during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And I came on initially as a volunteer. I've worked with LHT in the past in different capacities.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came on as a volunteer and ended up taking on the position as artistic director.
Nice. That's kind of trial by fire, you know, to take over a, mm-hmm, theater in the midst of a pandemic.
Yeah, it was kind of a moment of clarity for me.
In what way?
Because I felt like I was moving into the next phase of my time here in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. I've been an actor, director, and a playwright for, you know, over 35 years in the Bay. And I wanted to maybe move into more a pivotal leadership role at this point in my career.
Oh, okay. So you were up for the challenge.
Yes.
And I bet it was hugely challenging.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot, especially now with the funding situation,
mm-hmm,
and just trying to keep a cultural institution afloat. Unfortunately, we don't get the funding that other theaters get. We're still trying to figure out why,
mm-hmm,
but we know that we just have to really reach out to our community for support. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we do plays for and about Black folks, and try to bring new stories to our community. And my time at Lorraine Hansberry Theater, my mission when I started, I am the first female artistic director at the theater, and the theater is over 43 years old.
Oh, wow.
And so I wanted to dedicate my time to nurturing and honoring Black female and femme-identified artists. So all of the shows that I've done so far in my time with LHT have mm-hmm. been stories written by Black females and starring Black females in the lead roles.
That's awesome. That leads us right into the Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body. Tell me about it.
Yes. Oh, wow. It has been such an amazing experience. It's just in the rehearsal room. And so I'm so excited to bring this story that follows a Black professor, Beatrice Free, who is a professor at the African American Studies Department, and she's the chair of the department. And she's decided at this time in her life, as she grows older, that she wants to write a Black feminist guide to the human body.
Okay.
And so we join her in real time as she's composing this guide. And she's joined on stage by her alter egos, Body and Soul.
Ah.
And so they, you know, join together in telling this story to the audience and talking about the chapters of this Black feminist guide. And what we explore in the piece is our Black women resistance, as well as our joy, and all of our knowledge about the Black woman's body that we don't sometimes talk about. Mm. We ask some hard questions to the audience. Body and Soul ask B some hard questions about why she's writing this guide, what this guide means to her, and how it can help the community. The audience is also invited, after they witness the play, to add to the guide
mm.
and say, this is what I've learned in my life as a Black woman, things that we can share with each other to keep us strong, keep us going, and to also talk about Black women in community.
So what are some of the things that some of the parts of the Black the Black body that don't get discussed, that maybe are stigmatized or just, you know, kept hush-hushed?
Yeah, well, I think when we get older, we don't always talk about the changes that happen in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We explore asking the audience to really look at their bodies, value their Black female bodies. And we talk about the joys in aging and having wisdom, and also the joy in being at a certain age where you are grounded mm-hmm. and know who you are and how you present yourself in the world, and honoring your body as a vessel for power, a vessel for change. We have some really fun moments of talking about our hair
mm-hmm.
and all the beauty that comes with our hair. The play is filled with music and movement. We have a moment in the play where we ask, what hurts? What hurts, mm-hmm. Black woman? And having space for that. And we also talk about Black women in academia, because Beatrice Free, the character, as I mentioned, is a professor
mm-hmm.
at a prestigious institution. And we talk about how, as Black women, sometimes we don't know how to pause and rest.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a scene where B basically talks about working at this predominantly white institution as a black academic, and how we have to be careful of the risk factors of obesity, high blood pressure, and diabetes, and all of these things that can, with the stress of being a black woman in this world, how that could, you know, take us out. And so how do we take care of ourselves in those moments? And basically being in community with other black women.
Okay. So who wrote this play?
Yes. Dr. Lisa B. Thompson, mm-hmm. who is a playwright and scholar and a teacher at University of Texas, UT. And she is originally from San Francisco. And we're so excited to welcome her home. Mm-hmm. Lisa is a prolific playwright, as well as the department chair of African American Studies at UT Texas. And she has been affiliated with Lorraine Hansberry Theater in the past. She wrote a piece called Single Black Female, mm-hmm. that was produced by LHT. I think in 2019, and we're so excited to have her back with this production of The Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body.
Okay, and then you mentioned the character, and it's not lost on me that her name is Bee Free, but who are all the characters, and who are the actors that that occupy those roles?
Yes, we have a tremendous team. We have Jacinta Kumbulu, who's playing Beatrice Free, B. Mm-hmm. We have Paige Mays, who's playing Cece. And then we have Phaedra Tillery Boughton, who's playing D. And again, Paige Mays is body and Phaedra is D, is soul.
Very cool, very cool. And so how long have you guys been working on it, and when does it open?
It opens on September 20th. It's next Friday.
Oh, okay.
And we've been, Lisa has been workshopping the play for a couple of years through the university. Three theaters, LHT, the Vortex, and the Pyramid Theater, came together to co-commission Lisa's piece. We started talking about the piece a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. We all came in together and commissioned the piece, and Lisa began writing the piece. Mm-hmm. She's done workshops in Texas. I was able to go down and do a workshop of the piece with Lisa. And then this production is a rolling premiere, which started at the Vortex Theater in Austin, Texas, and then it went to the Pyramid Theater in Iowa, and then now it is coming here to San Francisco, and it is running from September 19th, which is a preview performance, until October 6th.
Okay, okay. And just for our listening audience who maybe doesn't know, what is the history of the Lorraine Hansberry Theater?
Yes, the Lorraine Hansberry Theater was founded by Stanley Williams and Quentin Easter. And again, it's 43 years old. It was founded in San Francisco and had a really tremendous following in the past, and had a theater space in San Francisco right on Sutter Street. Over the years, they produced all black plays, a lot of August Wilson, and just highlighting black stories, both contemporary and classic. Unfortunately, Stanley and Quentin passed away in the 2000s, mm-hmm. and the establishment was taken over by Stephen Anthony Jones. Mm-hmm. And so he was the first artistic director after Stanley and Quentin died.
Okay.
And it's interesting because I was actually doing a play with Lorraine Hansberry Theater. We were doing Fabulation, a play by Lynn Nottage.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, it was during the time of Stanley's passing. But we went on and we did the play. Stephen Anthony Jones came in again as the artistic director.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had an opportunity to be with Stanley and Quentin when they were passing away. So it is full circle for me to now come back and be the artistic director of this theater.
And do you
love
it? It's
one of the oldest. It is one of the oldest black theaters in the nation, and most certainly the oldest black theater in San Francisco.
And I know that there are other black theaters here in the Bay Area and around the country, and theater in general is struggling. I mean, it seems like everybody is experiencing that crunch of how will we survive. So what kinds of what can you offer us, some sort of, I don't know, like advice or,
right,
you know, something to give them hope?
Well, I truly believe that theater changes people.
Mm-hmm.
I truly believe that culturally specific theater educates and creates a space for our stories to be told and for our truth to be told. I think when people come to see plays like at culturally specific institutions,
mm-hmm,
they get to see us in a way that is not taught in schools.
Mm.
And as we know, they are taking our stories out of schools.
Yes.
We can't talk about critical race theory. They're dismantling all of the DEI efforts. And so it's so important to keep these institutions open so that we can tell our history, especially for our younger generations. I think there is hope in community. I think that we need to get a younger audience in so they can witness the joy of live theater. And I would say we have a mission to continue to tell our stories, and that the hope is that folks will continue to support these culturally specific institutions, especially our black theaters. I know that for me personally,
mm-hmm,
it is so important for me to continue with Lorraine Hansberry Theater and get the word out of what we do. This theater company has lasted 43 years, which is profound,
mm-hmm,
especially in these times.
Yes.
As you say, when theater is struggling. But I think that we can't think about it not being there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to get out into our communities and get people to continue to support us, as well as produce theater that people want to see, and theater that, you know, lifts us up as a community.
Very good. Now, with that in mind, how do people, like, let's say again, the dates and the times for the Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body, and where can they get tickets?
Yes. So, again, we are starting our preview performance on September 19th, opening on September 20th.
Mm-hmm.
The play runs Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 8 p.m., and on Saturdays at 4 and Sundays at 4.
Okay.
So we have two shows on Saturdays, 4 p.m. and an 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Sundays we have a 4 p.m. And you can get tickets by going to our website at lhtsf.org. That's lhtsf.org. And you will see the sign for tickets for the Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body. And it is at the Magic Theater, which is at Fort Mason.
Mm-hmm.
The actual address is 2 Marina Boulevard in San Francisco. It's right at the Fort Mason Center,
mm-hmm.
and we are in Building D.
All right. All right. And is there anything else you would like our listening audience to know about either the production or the Lorraine Hansberry Theater in general?
Yes. I would love to tell the studio audience that we are here, we are thriving, and we really would love for you to come out and see this show. I think in this show, it may say The Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body in the title,
mm-hmm.
but it is for everyone. It's amazing to see the responses. We did a reading at MOAD, and there were a lot of responses from men in the audience saying that this really touched their heart, and they got to see their mothers and aunties Aww. And sisters in a way that they hadn't thought of before, with empathy. So this is open to all races, male, female, femme-identified artists. We ask you all to come and celebrate the Black woman and just come out and have a good time and join us for this production. And again, you know, celebrate Lorraine Hansberry Theater by going to our website and seeing ways of which you can support us.
All right. Well, Margot Hall, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
All right.
Having me and LHT.
All right, people of Earth, Lorraine Hansberry Theater. It's a gem that you don't want to lose. So go check out the Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body. It's just about time for me to ride off into the sunset. So I'm going to leave you with some Aretha Franklin, some Cameo, and some Fontella Bay. So until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.